My guest today is Sean Riley Simmons, one of the owners of Level Best Books, which is a women-owned and operated publishing company. Level Best Books publishes crime fiction novels and short story anthologies, and they are well-regarded in the publishing community. My conversation today with Sean offers a lot of tips and advice for writers who are seeking publication with a smaller boutique agency, who want to go to one of the big five or one of the larger independent publishers, and for those who want to indie publish. So it's a conversation ripe with information that you can apply to your own career. Hello, hello. I'm Melissa Bourbon, and this is the Writer Spark podcast, where business, creativity, and the craft of writing converge. Welcome. 15 years ago, I was an avid reader, but not a writer. I didn't know anything about the actual craft, and I knew next to nothing about the publishing industry. But I had a dream to become a published author, and I set out to learn everything I could. Now, I'm a number one Amazon and national best-selling author of more than 35 novels. I've published traditionally, and I recently plunged into the world of indie publishing. And I teach people like you how to grow in their craft and find success in this ever-changing industry. I'm an ordinary person, a wife, a mom, a daughter, a teacher, living in a small North Carolina town. Through WriterSpark, I am doing what I love more than anything in the world, which is teaching and helping others on their writing journeys. I'm here as your partner as you navigate your own writing journey. I'm here to help you understand the essential elements of the writing craft, to build your confidence, and to help you find the success you desire. Welcome to the WriterSpark podcast. My guest today is Sean Riley Simmons, co-founder of Level Best Books, a publisher, small boutique publisher, and I am so excited to have you here and to talk about your path. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor, and it's nice to be on the other end of the interview for once. I'm usually on the other side, but this is very nice, and I'm honored that you asked me.
Well, thank you. I know that feeling of always being on the one side of the chair. Well, let's start with a little bit of your background. So I know that we shared a small publisher once upon a time, and you have gone into business on your own as a publisher. And, I'm very curious as to what took you there, but you started like we all did as a writer. So let's start with a little bit about your background there.
Yeah, I was, the first thing I did was organized a large mystery convention in the DC area every spring. And through that, I started meeting a lot of different writers and sort of got to know a lot of people because I literally knew nobody. I didn't have any contacts in the industry at all. And then I got a publishing deal with our former press, and that was very exciting. But I had been writing short stories too in between. So the very first thing I ever got published was a short story, in fact. And then that same year, I think it was later that year, the first set of novels came out, which was very heady time. So right after all of that, I was on Facebook one day and I saw that Level Best was actually previously owned by a set of editors. This was the second set of editors. They founded it in 2003 just for one purpose, to publish an anthology of the best New England crime stories. That was all that the press was there for. It was just for that. And that every year would be released at New England Crime Bake. So I'd been to New England Crime Bake, and I've been to all the cons because, I'm a con gal. So I saw that post and I'm like, oh, that's just such a, it's a shame because it's an MWA approved press. It's award winning. It's respected. And, yes, it was very niche, but that was, it was still had gone through all those hurdles to get, it was legit. Mm-hmm. So I sent them a message and I said, hey, to one of the editors who every single year would come to my convention. I'm like, hey, what's going on with that? That's just a shame because I'm a short story writer on top of it. So losing a market, losing a place to get published was also not great, mm-hmm. In my opinion. So they said, yeah, we really don't want to do this, but we just don't have the time. And they were all published authors with multiple series and a lot of things going on. And it's a ton of work. It's a ton of work just to do one anthology. It's a ton of work.
Yeah.
So I said, hey, what do you think about letting me have it? And they said, you know, we've had other people ask and we didn't think that was, it would be a good fit, but we wouldn't say that to you. So please, if you'd like it, please come and talk to us. I'm like, okay. So I went up to Boston and I had a meeting with them and I bought the company. So, and it was, but like I said, we really, they said, all we ask is that you do that anthology for 3 more years. So we did it for 5. And then I said, well, we're going to want to do other things. And they said, yeah, yeah, that's fine. I said, also, we're not from New England. Is that cool? And they're like, yeah. So, but it was sort of, that's how it all went. But it really was just to save that anthology. That's what it was about.
So was it a quick decision like you describe it to be, or was there a lot of going back and forth? And I know you have a partner. So, I mean, how quick was that decision? You just knew that this is what you wanted to do, or did you have to really, you know, think about it?
It was like many things I've done that have been huge life changing things. I decided on the spot, and that was just, for some reason, I was really compelled to do it. So I just wanted, I thought this is what we should do. Let's just get this done. And it was within a couple of weeks that I had it all. I saw that post and I went up and it was all done. So that was that. That was, it was real fast. And I've done other big giant things real fast. So it's just what I do.
But yes, it wasn't a kindred spirit, because I'm quite similar in that respect. I know a lot of people who hem and haw and, you know, really process through things and it takes a very long time to make a decision. And I'm like, no, let's do it right now.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think the spontaneity, it was exciting and it was, you know, and also just wanted to, I didn't want to lose this opportunity. Mm-hmm. And then we just started working, and I think we did the anthology the first year. I think we did 2 other anthologies. So we just kept, we stuck to short stories that first phase. And then the next year we decided to add some novels. And I said, this, we're getting into a whole different kind of business here. So, and I had, we had other partners that have since left, and, but we all, we're like, okay, let's give this a shot. And our first novel that we did was nominated for Agatha Award. So that wasn't too bad. I'm like, oh, maybe we have something here. Yeah. And then the, you know, anthologies continued to do well and get recognized. And so it was very nice to take something over that was already in place, but then expand on it and grow it into something different.
What made you expand from short stories and anthologies into novels?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's because we were also much involved in other areas of the mystery world, and people were coming to us and sort of pitching books, and we're like, oh, well, that sounds exciting. And then I was very heavily entrenched in writing my novels at the time. And I remember saying to them, like, this is different. This is a, you know, you do an anthology, it's like you get a contract. Maybe you hold the rights for a year. You know, the author always holds the rights, but maybe you have the right to publish it for a year. Mm-hmm. And then they get it back. And now we're getting into bed with people for like 5 years, 6 years, a long time. So
or
let's be
indefinitely, as we know.
Right, right. Or you're in hell forever. No. Yes. We don't want to go there. No, but yes, so that was, yeah, we've already been through there. But that's how it started. Someone sent us a book and it was really good. We all really liked it. And we're like, okay, let's try this. Let's do this. And then we got ourselves set up to do novels. And it was sort of like just finding our way. And then once we started having that initial success, then we are flooded. We're flooded every week with people sending a lot of stuff that I have to get through. We all have to get through.
So you work as an editor, correct? Do you still write?
Yes. Yes. I'm very tired. Yes. I'm just kidding. No, I write. Yeah. Read a lot. Yeah, I've actually just finished another short story this weekend, and then working, my novels have come back out mm-hmm. through Level Best, and that series is now continuing. I have been invited to submit to a bunch of different anthologies this year, so I got a lot of stuff on the calendar. But yes, mm-hmm. I have to carve out time every day just for that. But the business, running the business, does take up a lot of my day, so I try to get the writing done first thing if I can. So
yeah. You act as an editor, an acquiring editor, I'm assuming, and how many other people, like, what does your business look like?
Yeah. Well, we have 2 partners now. We had 4 and we've come down to 2. Mm-hmm. We have now a staff of people. We didn't used to just be the 4 of us basically doing everything. And now we have the 2 partners and we both are editors. So we have a stable of authors and we each take primary on whichever ones we're working with. But we both end up working with all of them in the end. But that's, you start out with one of us. And then we do go through all the developmental stages, editorial stages, and then we get it ready for production. So, but in addition to us, we have a marketing admin assistant who's wonderful, who just does so much stuff for us. It's amazing. And I love just sending her emails like, hey, can you take care of this? So mm-hmm. She's wonderful. We have a production editor that handles all the files and like getting stuff ready for publication, like all that fiddly, intricate work that to make things look good when they get published. So we have her. We just had a junior editor who was our intern that we had for a couple of years, and she's just left. Mm-hmm. So we're looking for a new junior editor. But she was great because she was a college age student, and we have a YA imprint, and she was really good at, you know, picking out, this is good, I like this way this story runs. So she was actually doing some developmental editing for us at towards the end, and she was doing really good. But she's gone on to go work at a giant corporation. She's very excited about. Mm-hmm. And we have a slush pile group of readers. So they comb through things that come in over the transom, and then they will bring them to us and say, hey, we have four of them. And they'll just say, this is a gem. Because, you know, it's really hard when it's just all flowing in and we don't want to lose anything and miss anything. So we do have those people coming through those submissions. But yeah, that's basically, I feel like I'm missing. Oh, and we have a bookkeeper. I forgot about that. So we have, but we are, you know, expanding and looking for hopefully to get some more editorial roles filled. But so far we're doing pretty good with our team. And it's all women, which is, it's a women owned and run business, 100%.
Yeah. I love that. I know I spoke with you about book covers. So you do your book covers in-house as well.
Yes. Yes. I do most of that. I do a lot of the book covers. We do have a couple of artists that we do work with, and we have some authors that have always had the one artist that they love. And as long as everyone's cool with it, we don't have a problem with that. But yes, we do. We don't, you know, we're not a vanity press or a co-op or whatever hybrid. We, you know, everything is done in-house at, you know, obviously it's traditional publishing. So, but yeah, it's been, I like doing the art. It's kind of fun. It's fun. And your art is beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It's a great kind of reprieve from the word side of things. It's a different, tapping into a different part of your creativity, which I love, you know, and it gets me out of my head and out of my stories, which I need a break from. I'm sure you do too.
Yeah. And absolutely. And it's like a little palate cleanser, a refresher. And I try to do them. I do try to structure my week where I have a focus each day, and I have Thursdays sort of set aside for like graphics. That's the focus. Like what is due, what needs to happen, how is everything looking? You know, I just sort of like, so I don't feel insane. I feel like I try to, so Thursdays are fun because I can put on some music and sit and play with the book covers. And it is nice when they come back and they love something right away.
Yeah.
But the process, that's lovely. It's nice. Yeah. And I have to say, as you know,
I've worked with some people who are very difficult, I will say. I'm surprised, you know, with my publishing contracts, they pretty much come to you with a cover and say, hey, you know, what do you think? What's your feedback? And, you know, the reality is you don't really have much feedback option. You know, you basically say, oh, yeah, it's really nice, or it's really nice. But as an independent cover designer, I've had some clients that are just really persnickety and difficult. And sometimes it's a challenge.
Absolutely. It can be tricky. You know, we always keep it in the contract that we have final say. So it really is sort of a courtesy that we do this process. But I do like the idea of the authors having some kind of buy-in, because I think if you're proud of something and you really love the way something looks, you're going to be more enthusiastic about getting out there with your book.
Absolutely.
So we, you know, yeah, we like to be collaborative, but we do have to draw the line sometimes where it gets crazy. It's like, okay, that's enough. It's enough feedback. But what we do is I have a form that I have them fill out, and I say, you know, what are your thoughts? And there's just multiple questions that they answer. And then I say, you know, basically pointing to, what do you think this book cover should be? And then I always say, please give me some examples of book covers that you like.
Right.
And it'll be interesting because sometimes the words do not match up to the things that they're showing me visually that they like. I'm like, this person really likes blue, even though they said no blue. So I just sort of like, and then I give them 2 to 3 options, most of the time 3. And then they choose from those. And that's how we do it. But I have to say 90% of the time, everyone is just like, oh, I like number 3. And sometimes I get really lucky and they like all of them. And then there's the series. And all the work is done.
Yes,
it is a fun part of the job. I do enjoy it.
Yeah. So let's go back and talk about how you structure your week. I really love that you brought up that you have a focus for the day. So is every day structured that way, that you have a focus? I know you said you tend to write your own stuff in the morning or in the beginning of the day, and then you move on to your business. But how do you structure your week? I love that, because I try to do that too. I'm not always successful, but you know, I do podcasts Tuesday, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and during these hours so that I can control my time better. You know, if I open it up, then suddenly I've lost control of my calendar and my day. And so I try really hard to to control that and to structure my week so that I can be as productive as possible with the things I need getting done. But it's not always easy, but I'd love to hear how you do that.
Yeah. And there's always going to be outliers. And, you know, if you get a really big name author that wants to come on your podcast, they can only do Mondays. And, you know, yeah, obviously you're going to make that happen. But I do like to, you know, have it for the same reason, because you start feeling like you're insane if you're always being pulled in all these different directions. And, you know, for people that have multiple things on. So I have it on my corkboard over here. I print it out every year. I do like a vision board and schedule my week. So Mondays I do organizing is cleaning out all the inboxes, answering mm-hmm. any outstanding emails, getting the looking at the calendar, like what's going on this week. So, and then I always have a meeting with our assistant, a standing meeting every Monday morning. We just talk about what has to happen. Is anyone freaking out? Like, what's going on? So that's Monday. And I try to load meetings towards the front part of the week, just because I like to have some free Thursday and Friday. I like to be free of things. Although, like I said, there's always going to be something. And then Tuesday, I focus on marketing, and that's for the business. So we have releases come out on Tuesdays. So we're, you know, and our marketing person is doing most of the heavy lifting, but I will just have a focus on outreach to bookstores, libraries, putting stuff on social media, just making sure everything's looking good for the authors that day. Mm-hmm. Thinking of new things to do, sending books out for review is a big one. And I make sure I do that on Tuesday, so I just don't forget, you know, and I go through the list and like whose arcs are ready to go out. Mm-hmm. And then Wednesday is podcast day. I focus on podcast. Mm-hmm. And all of this being said, like if something pops up in another area, it gets handled. It's not like I'm like, oh, you have to wait till next Tuesday. But Wednesday, I focus on the podcast, and mm-hmm. I try to schedule all my interviews that day, and then, you know, marketing and promoting of the podcast, you know, all this, you know, all the stuff you have to do behind
you
the scenes.
You edit your podcast yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that takes a lot of time. Mm-hmm. A lot of time.
Yeah. Everything we do. And it's all fun. It's all fun things, but they do their time. But if you want to be good and professional and correct, you're going to take you put care into it. Mm-hmm. I also produce, my partner has a podcast. Mm-hmm. And I produce her podcast. She does one that focuses on history mm-hmm. novels and things like that. So hers comes out less frequently than mine, but it's on Sundays. And then Thursday, as I said, is fun graphics day. Maybe I have, you know, I might have a glass of wine at 3 and keep doing book covers all night. You never know that day. And then Friday, I try to focus on my household, like my own personal house. Like mm-hmm. if I have to do any appointments or take the car to the shop or anything like that, I try to do that on like pay the bills and that kind of stuff on Friday. And, you have to have a day to do mm-hmm. your house. Your house starts falling apart.
Yeah.
Saturdays for family and Sundays for relaxing and writing. And it's not, the weekends I do try to bulk up my word count if I've had an off, like I didn't wake up early enough on morning. Mm-hmm. So weekends I try to focus on family and just writing, because they love football and they watch sports constantly. So I can be like just sitting with them and they don't even know I'm writing. So that's fine. So that's the week.
what I didn't hear in there is your editorial commitments. So when are you reading and when are you acquiring and when are you editing?
Yeah. Between, I try to stop hard work at like four and six and read. So I try to do at least a couple hours a day. If I, you know, in developmental editing takes, you know, to sit and read it. But yeah, towards the end of the day, cause I'm tired of, you know, line editing at times sometimes. And it's just nice to get away from the screen and then I can sit and read mm-hmm. from 4 to 6. I mean, it's a different screen, but at least it's a different screen. But yes, I have carved that out.
Very, very busy. As you said mm-hmm. earlier to me, you wear a lot of hats. You definitely do. I thought I did.
Oh, and then, well, it's funny because I used to do this giant convention in DC every year, which Malice, I did Malice for 20 years and I resigned, and, you know, retired. I essentially turned everything over to the new person that's doing it now. And that was a huge, gigantic workload. This is the first year I'm not feeling that, because it would be very, I would have to like turn Wednesdays had to be Malice days back then. So mm-hmm. I would have to turn and just work on them all day. So now I have that freed up.
Now you're on BoucherCon.
Exactly. Yes. I'm on the board. And it's 4 years away. Oh, three. It's now 3 years since we're in 2024. So it's technically 3 years. But yes, that's less work intensive, because I was really like the operational engine at Malice, and this is more, I'm on the board. Yes, it's going to be busy, but we have a big committee and we're mm-hmm. actually meeting next week to talk about our meeting schedules and like who's going to be taking on what roles and that kind of thing. So we're still in the mm-hmm. beginning infancy, but I'm not feeling too freaked out about it, because I did Malice for so long. So it's kind of like, I kind of know how it should look, you know.
You're doing BoucherCon for 2027, so it's a one-off versus an every year kind of thing, right?
Yes, but you're on the board. So you go, you're required to go to the meetings and things, but they're, I think they're like seasonal. They're less frequent. They're less, they're definitely less frequent at this point for me, and they're Zoom. But yeah, yeah, it'll be, it'll increase with frequency as we get closer to our date. But we have to go to Nashville first, and then it's going to be Nashville and then New Orleans and Calgary and then us. So there's three ahead of us, but I will be, you know, asked to go to meetings when I'm on site and stuff like that. But it's very exciting. I'm on the communications committee. Oh, they asked me which committee I wanted to do. So I was doing communicate. I'm like, that's the one I know. Cause it was like legal. I'm like, you know, I want, I want to do the fun one where I talk to everyone.
Yeah. Do you like to go to conferences? Do you go as Sean Riley Simmons, the author? Do you go as Sean Riley Simmons, the editor of Level Best, or both when you go to conferences?
That's a good question. I do go to as both. I hadn't been, obviously none of us had been for a couple years. And then I couldn't go the following year after that, cause I was, had cancer. So I was going through chemo for almost a year. So I didn't go to them for a while, but when I came back out this year, I went to San Diego and it was amazing. And I was there as me, I think. Yeah. I was there as me on a panel, but I was also there. I was there a lot as Level Best, cause we were, there were 40 of us there. And I set up meetings with everyone if they wanted to sit with me for 15 minutes. They didn't have to, or then, you know, so I had like a little space outside of the Starbucks and they would come and I had,
you mean
I
was 40 scheduled. Of your authors were there.
Yeah. We had a big, turnout and we had a little, gathering at one of the bars one night or one afternoon. But yeah, so I was there a lot of the time I was there as Level Best and a new BoucherCon board member too. So that was also, that was my debut. I was initiated into the board there. But yeah, I was also on a panel about characters, I think, but it was a lot of business talk. So it felt, it was a lovely trip. It was wonderful. I had such a good time. That was really well run. Yeah, it was really, really well done. The BoucherCon in San Diego was excellent.
Good. And your health is okay now?
Yeah, I'm doing really good. I actually go for scans tomorrow. Oh. So that'll be a year. When they give me the all clear, it'll be 1 year under me. So the further out you get, I think you get a little less like scan anxiety, but yeah. It's not, you know, like, I don't want to go back down there. I really don't want to go, but I have to go. But yeah, they haven't touched me in a year. So that's lovely. And I hope to be able to say that next week.
So. That's great. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Today's episode is sponsored by WriterSpark Book Cover Design. I know how challenging it can be to get top quality, stunning book covers at an affordable price. This is why I created WriterSpark Book Cover Design. I create beautiful book covers that are competitive in the marketplace at prices that will not break your budget. Each of my covers, pre-made or custom, uses premium design and typography elements. All textual elements are customizable. That means the title, subtitle, author name, and cover quote. Affordable pricing doesn't mean sacrificing quality. Check out WriterSpark Book Cover Design at www.writersparkbookcovers.com. I would love to work with you.
What is it like in your brain? Because I have to say, when it comes to January, I, you know, take a little time to reflect on the year prior. And then I take some time to think about what I want this year to look like. And last year was just crazy for me. I had so many writing projects of my own. You know, I have the podcast. It's been about a year and a half, I think, for the podcast. I have a writing academy. So I have online courses that I run. I have all of these things going on. And so many times I have felt incredibly overwhelmed. And so I decided to really pull back and not do so many of my own writing projects. I'm working on one thing and I'm not putting anything up for pre-order until much later, so I don't have that pressure. And I must say, since I've been feeling a little bit better after being sick with that RSV, the last week I've been focused in writing and it's been so lovely to not have my brain crowded with all of these other pressures and things going on. So how do you feel overwhelmed? Do you thrive on that? I mean, I didn't realize how overwhelmed I was until I really pulled back.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you gave yourself that break and you pulled back and then look, your creativity started to flow. I mean, not that it was, you know, stilted, but it you gave yourself a break. And I think that's what we all have to do.
Yeah.
I don't feel, well, it's funny because I had to spend a lot of time in bed because I was running. I think in 2019, before everything shut down, I was away 12 times. I was at either book conferences, family trips. I went to everything. I was gone once. I was every single month. I had some kind of trip somewhere. I was in Canada. I was in Paris. I was everywhere, Texas. And we all went to Dallas. So then everything screeched to a halt, and then we started focusing on being home. And that was a big transition for me because, you know, when you go away, I found myself falling behind on a lot of things because it's not like you get off the plane, you go right back to work. You have to like decompress, at least I do, for a day or two. And sometimes you're sick after that. And, you know, so that all of that kind of went away. And then I went through all of 22 sort of struggling to even have enough energy to do anything. Mm-hmm. So I'm just surprised that we were able to do anything. And we published over 100 books. And I don't know how it happened. I couldn't tell you how that happened. We Amazing. Did bring on staff. Yeah, it was. So now when I feel a little bit like I have so much work, I'm like, well, I managed to get it all done when I was really sick and in a lot of pain and on painkillers a lot of the time and throwing up and all the other lovely things that go along with chemo. So that's how I pep talk myself into not being overwhelmed. I'm like, I got this done when I was really, really at rock bottom. And I mean, I spent a couple of weeks in the hospital. I mean, it was a mess. So It's almost like when you're a runner and you run a marathon, you're like, this is easy. I can run 5 miles. It's fine. You know, but that's a good, really good question. But I think you do need to when you start feeling like you're not happy, even though we've chosen all these fun things to do. And that's really intriguing about your writing academy. I think I have not done that. That's one thing I'm not doing. that's very cool. But I think you're giving yourself a break. You're giving yourself the grace to say, okay, I don't need to do 500 things. I can do 300 and then add some things back in if I feel like it. But the not traveling constantly was a big wake up call. It's like now it can be, and I've been everywhere. So it's like now I can be more selective about which things I'm going to go to this year and not be away from my family so much and that and the work really, and not fall behind.
I'm a homebody, I find. Yeah. If I'm traveling too much or if I overcommit myself, I end up being resentful towards myself. Like, why did I say yes? You know, a year ago, it sounded fine to say yes. But now that it's upon me, I'm like, why did I say yes? I don't want to do this. I just want to be home.
Yeah, I hear you.
I'm going to Atlanta next month. I'm speaking at the Atlanta Writers Club. They have a conference there. And I'm just like flying in that day, turning around, flying back the next morning. You know, it's just quick as I can make it.
That's well, good. You've known, now you know that about, you know, yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's good to have those boundaries, your own, that you put in place for your own self, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to Atlanta and I think it's March. I think I'm going to be there in March for the Atlanta Writers Conference. They invited me to come and listen to pitches.
Oh, nice.
So I will be there in Atlanta. When I grew up in South Florida, so I assumed everyone flew through Atlanta to go anywhere because that's what we always did. So when I was a little kid, you're like, oh, you go to Atlanta first and then you go wherever else you want to go. But not quite. But I have been through the airport a million times as a kid. So can't wait to see it.
Yeah. How fun. So what keeps you going with Level Best? So what is it that, you know, so initially you said you didn't want to see this MWA publisher approved, MWA approved publisher go away. You know, you felt like you wanted to keep it going and to continue on what had already been created, but it is a lot of work. And, you know, in a very crowded field, and especially with indie publishing as it is now, what keeps you going with it when there's so much competition and just so many different pathways that people can take? Because I imagine it's really difficult.
It's what keeps, I just love the authors and that is what keeps me going. I think that's the seed behind all of these things that I've done because I am that extrovert person out there. Like, let's have a party. Let's throw a big party. And we all come to it. You know, that's me. Like I started the podcast because I missed everybody and it was, you know, I was isolated in my house and I missed everyone and I wanted to start interviewing. And it was also a way for our authors to get some exposure. So that was part of that. And VoucherCon, because I know I have the skill set to bring to help them make it a great thing, you know, so it's all to do with the community. So for me, it's every inspiration I've ever had is because I'm honored to be a part of this community because I've been a part of other communities that aren't supportive and welcoming and are more cutthroat and, you know,
sketchy,
difficult to be around. Yeah, exactly. Backstabby, that kind of thing. Yeah. And you know, there's people like that here too. But the majority of this, I mean, this is my dream job. Mm-hmm. It's a job I've always wanted. I'm totally cut out to do this work. I know what I'm doing. I'm good at building a team. I feel. And you know, I love the edit. I really love collaborating with the authors on their books. Mm-hmm. So when they turn in their manuscript, and I love the developmental editorial stage. I can mm-hmm. talk. You know, you read it and then you give them the big notes, like, oh, why is this character doing this? And I think the story drags a little bit here, and what can we think of to make this better? That is my favorite part. And then the covers are fun too, because it's, you know, we built this community. And now we have 175 authors. We started out with not a lot, and now we have 175 roughly. And we have like Zoom meetings that they can all come to, like once every couple months, if they want to, they can come and chat and meet each other and see us, and we talk about what's going on with the business. And through that, a lot of them have met each other and paired off and gone on to do events together and things like that. So we're really sort of building a community, as opposed to like, here's your book, have fun.
Yeah.
We really try to support them and help them and bring out good books. I mean, that's it. And I think, you know, there isn't competition, because a person doesn't read a book over and over and over again every week. They're going to read your book and like, oh, I really love this book, and it's set in the 1800s and it was wonderful. Let me go find another author that writes kind of like this. And so it's always, it's a self-feeding positivity train, if we can keep it going. So that's it. That's my dream job. I've worked in other jobs that I didn't think were fun. I know what it's like to not work in your dream job. I mean, I always did well. I was a salesperson, but you know, when you're working for someone else, you're selling their thing and you're getting nice money, usually, hopefully, but it's their thing. So this is our thing. And mm-hmm. Every single thing I do promotes something that we own and is ours. And that is the motivating factor.
That is pretty exciting to have created something out of nothing. It's very rewarding. Yeah.
It is. It's like every time you write a novel, it's like that didn't exist a year ago. And now here you mm-hmm. are with this new story. And it, you know, it's just, it is the art of it's hard. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is really hard. There's personality, especially being a publisher, there's personalities you have to deal with and things, you know, it's a business. So it's not all rainbow and sunshine. You know, there's things that happen and go wrong and things like that. But I want to get up and work every day. And like I said, when I sold, you know, space on airplanes, it wasn't such, I mean, it was like, this is not the most exciting thing to talk about, but here I am telling this, you know. But that's the driving factor. And, if, you know, it's very exciting when you feel like you're good at something that other mm-hmm. people are responding to. You know, I feel like that's a big part of it too.
Yeah. I was a teacher. I was a public school teacher for a long time, you know, an English major and all of that. And then I started writing and finally was able to leave the classroom. But teaching is just in my blood. And that's what led me to create the Writing Academy, because I still wanted to teach, but I didn't want to go back to the classroom. So now I teach writing to aspiring writers or, you know, somebody who wants to write a cozy mystery. I do one-on-one coaching, and I also do freelance editing, you know, so it's something that I really enjoy, that's in my wheelhouse, and I'm able to do that and still stay within this industry that I'm passionate about, which is exciting.
Yeah. So you and I are similar, and we've created sort of like our own little personal cottage industry inside this place we want to be. So that is fascinating. So did you, why did you start the podcast?
I started the podcast, you know, so when I first started, like you, I didn't know anything. I didn't know anybody. I didn't know anything. I knew I wanted to write a book, but I didn't know how to write a book. I was an avid reader. I knew how to read a book, but I didn't know how to craft a story. And the internet and resources were not what they are now. Back then, back in the olden days, this was like 2002. And I relied a lot on the people that I did meet. I joined RWA, Romance Writers of America. So that was the organization near me, even though I was writing mysteries. And I've told this story before, but you know, I had ultimately two offers of representation from agents. One was a boutique agency, and she loved my story. And the other was a big agency. And everybody that I talked with about it said, go with the big agent, go with the big agency. And I don't regret my decision, because I like where I am right now. But I do wonder what would have happened had I made the other choice, because she was passionate about my work. and the bigger agent wasn't. You know, she thought she could sell it. And we revised it to make it more romance, which was a mistake because that wasn't what it was. I lost my voice in that whole thing. And anyway, long story short, she didn't sell it. And I ended up changing to a different agent altogether and brought it back to mystery. And then she did end up selling it. And so I learned so much over the course of 10 years, you know, when I was going through all of this. And so with the Writing Academy and with the blog and the articles that I write and with the podcast, it was sort of a way to pay it forward, to help people get answers and learn stuff about the industry and learn from people who have come before, you know, because we've all been there. We've all been at the beginning. And so it just started as a way to help people, you know, to be there as a resource. And, you know, turns out it's fun to do. And my network has grown. You know, I just know so many people now like you. And if I, you know, have a question about something, I have somebody I can ask, I can tap into, I can, you know, just reach out because I've spoken with so many people and I continue to learn. I think we're always learning. And I love that as well. So that's kind of what led me.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And anytime you do anything that's benefiting other people in your community or other writers at supporting other members of the community, it pays you back 300,000 times over. Yeah. I mean, it's just how it works. I mean, it's just, you know, you put out good energy and you're helping, offering resources. I mean, that's all, people really appreciate that. The good people. I mean, there's, you know, like I said, there's always a pill here and there, but for the most part, everyone's great. Yeah. But yeah, it's, so we're very similar in that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, we're very entrepreneurial. I was so excited the first time a PR person reached out to me to pitch their author to have on the podcast. I was like, ooh, I feel like I've made it now because I'm not reaching out to people. They're reaching out to me now, which was also very exciting.
Yeah, the first time I got one of those, I was like, they know it's just me, right? I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh. So I replied, I'm thinking, oh, they just probably send this to everybody. And they were like, oh, yeah, she would love to be on the show. I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. So I just it's Tuesday, but I had to do my interview this week for today because I have to go down to have scans tomorrow, which I don't want to do, but I'm going to do anyway. it's going to be fine. But she's from one of the big five publishing houses, and she came on my podcast last year and she wanted to come back. And I'm like, all right, cool. You know, it's really, and through a publicist. So that's awesome. That's what happens. I wasn't pushing it out to try to get that. It was just, they came to us. So that's what you want to have happen, because that's just, the energy flows coming back to you, as I said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Positivity.
So what tips would you give to an author who's searching for the right path for them in seeking a publisher, or whether to go indie? Because we have, you know, the indie path. I'm hybrid. I've been with a big publisher, a boutique publisher, and I've done indie. And, you know, there's pros and cons to all of those things. And, you know, so what would you say to somebody who's just not sure what direction to go? Do I go indie? Do I go with a boutique publisher? Do I go with somebody like Level Best? Do I go, you know, try and get the agent and go to one of the big ones? Also, do you require agent submissions or do you accept author submissions?
We accept author submissions. Okay. We're still currently doing that. We do work with quite a large number of agents at this point. So maybe 20 or 25 or so are always bringing us new stuff, but we definitely don't turn someone down if they don't have an agent. Advice. That's such a good question. Multi-layered question, because you really just have to sit down and decide what you want your publishing career to look like and what your, you know, if you have to know what your skill set is, if you are able to, if you're not tech savvy or you're not sure, how to create files to publish, then maybe indie publishing wouldn't be the best way, because there are plenty of people out there that will take thousands of dollars from you to do it for you. But it really is, if you just kind of you can do it for almost free if you know what you're doing. So I was just talking with an agent last week, and he's really excited. His client really, really is excited about the prospect of working with us. Mm-hmm. And he said, this man has been my client is approached almost every single week with these, we'll publish your book. And he's a high profile, wealthy person. Mm-hmm. And they're like, they want $10,000 to publish this book. And I'm like, yes, they will do that. And that's fine. That is a way forward for whoever, if they want to do that. And they will, I guess they're sending you 1,000 books. I don't know what they're doing, but most of those are, a lot of those are scams. Mm-hmm. So I would do your research. Definitely just do your research on those kinds of things, because if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is, kind of thing.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. And then, I mean, agents are a whole other thing because, like we, like I said, we don't, but a lot of the major publishers, I think you pretty much have to have an agent to even get in the door at any of the big New York publishers. Mm-hmm. And sometimes even the smaller ones now. So that's a thing you might want to pursue, but I hate to think people are waiting like 10 years to get an agent and not publishing, because you never know what life will bring you. So don't wait 10 years.
All right. And now it's so hard. I mean, I think that people, agents and editors alike, they want something that's already perfect. You know, they don't want to put the time, they don't have time to put in, and the competition is so stiff. So it is tough.
Yes, it is very tough. There are things that I don't know if they still have it, but there was a thing, they probably do, on X, which is used to be Twitter. There was Pitch Wars, and you could go on and pitch to, there was like an agent pool, and they would read submission. Yeah. There are opportunities to get your name out there if you don't know anyone yet. So there's that too. So just, and there's lots of writing groups and things that will give you advice online, and you can join those groups and figure that piece out. But yes, it's not the easiest thing in the world to get an agent sometimes. I mean, I got very lucky. I have had three, and they all asked me. So I didn't have to do that process, but I have friends that have had to struggle to finding an agent. Mm-hmm. But then I think you have to figure out how much work you have to market your work, no matter if you're with a big publisher or a small one. With the smaller one, you may have to do more than if you're a bigger one, but still with bigger ones, they really kind of put a lot of marketing dollars behind the people that are already going to sell a lot of books.
Right. Yeah.
You know, everyone's going to buy John Grisham's book, and it's like, it's going to be on the Today Show and on the New York Times, but it's like, everyone's going to buy it anyway. So if you're a mid-list, or God forbid your one book doesn't do well, you know, they're not going to put a lot of money behind it to support you. Unfortunately, I don't know why. They do that,
but they do. It's a crazy system.
Yeah. So have all of that in mind going in. So the upside, as you know, and we all know, if you indie publish, you get all that's ROI is all coming right back to you. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. if a publisher will take a lot of a big cut of your earnings, so, and your agent will take a piece too.
Yeah. And they hold the rights for a long time, and you may never get the rights back, or, you know, it can take a long time depending on what the contract says. You know, it's tough when the sales are not there, and it's been published with a publisher for 5 years or 10 years and you can't do anything about it. You can't get it back to go with a smaller publisher or to indie publish it or anything, you know, like that yourself. It's frustrating.
Yeah, definitely in whatever situation. Oh, and speaking of rights, I forgot to mention, we do have an in-house agent that works on sub rights for us. So she's out there selling audiobooks and, you know, mass market paperback deals and things like that. So I forgot about her. She's great. But that just reminded me, because we're talking about rights, because you should have someone explain to you what the rights are in whatever contract you sign. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you can be sweet talked into saying, oh yeah, just keep them forever. Mm-hmm. And then if that publisher just decides to stop publishing, but appears to still be working and doing things, and you're done. At least that series is done. And then you have to think of something new. So,
yeah. And understanding, you know, print rights versus ebook rights and borrowing library rights, you know, KU and things like that, because a lot of publishers are going the KU route with some, or you're going to cycle in and out, and, you know, that's totally different. And it can be set up in such a way that you'll never fall beneath or below the threshold that they set in order to get the rights back. So yeah, definitely talk to somebody who knows contracts and know what you're signing. Yeah.
Yeah. And read every single thing in there, mm-hmm. because the thing you forget to read will be the one that will come back to get you later. But and you know, if you have a brother-in-law that's going to produce your book into a movie, don't hold on to your film rights, perhaps. I mean, contracts should be negotiable. Mm-hmm. And I would be very suspect of a publisher that won't negotiate with you on any of those types of things. Because, and especially if they don't have someone in-house selling these or exploiting these rights for you. Mm-hmm. So if they're going to hold on to your audiobook rights for 10 years and they don't have anyone out there selling it, then you just gave that up. You know, not that I'm trying to advocate for everyone to come at us all the time with our contracts. But speaking as an author, just know what you're willing to. And then, you know, as sometimes you can say, if you don't sell the audio within 12 months, I would like those to revert back to me. And you can have that conversation. And if a publisher is unwilling to talk to you about these finer points, then it's probably not a good, I'd be worried.
That's a red flag. Yeah. And, you know, I was in the industry for, I don't know, probably 10 or 11 years when I resold. I got the rights back to one series and resold it to that small press. And, you know, there were still lots of things that slipped by me and my agent, unfortunately. And that was probably the worst contract ever. And they weren't willing to negotiate. And, you know, it ended up being really a problem in the end. So that's why I think we're always learning. And that's why these types of conversations, I think, are so important, because at least that seed is planted that not everybody is out there looking at your best interest as an author. And you want to have a publishing company, an editor who's looking out for you, an agent, obviously, but, you know, somebody like you and Level Best that is part of this, creating this community, and is there for the author, not just for yourself. That's so important.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the way I go into everything is I have a reputation in the community for being a helper, a nice person, someone who's, you know, I like to maintain my reputation. So there's where we conduct our business in such a way, like, I'm not falling on my face here. You know, like, this is just, it's very important to me. You know, I came in fresh, didn't know anybody. Over 20 years, I've managed to meet a lot of people, and, you know, I would like to keep that going and not have anyone be like, oh my God, they're awful. You know, so not that we're doing anything, but you know what I mean? Like, I think what we have, we came in, we're a known entity, I guess is what I mean. It's not like we're off the street, brand new people to the community. It's like, you should know who we are, but at some point you've run into us here and there. I would think, at least our names. But that part I think is good. Not that you have to know your publisher intimately to have a good deal at all, but I do think I think it helps us, because we, like I said, we're not off the street hustler, you know, trying to hustle people. But it's interesting what you said about the contract and about your agent, because it's a very heady time when you get that call, and it's very exciting to have, because sometimes you've been out submitting for years. I had one author, she told me we were her 40th publisher or something that was submitted to. It's crazy. So it's a thrilling time. So it's easy to just be like, oh, here, sign it, whatever. Yeah. You're just going to sign stuff because you want it to happen. Yeah. So just keep that in mind. You know, it's not a marriage proposal. So you know, that's when you'd be like, yes, not this is, it's also a business, also very emotional and exciting, but it's also still a business.
Yeah. And you have to try really hard not to let those emotions interfere with the logical side of your brain that's helping you negotiate this or understand what it is you're signing, to make sure that it is working in your favor, you know, that you're represented in that contract, because a lot of contracts are not favoring the author at all. So
yeah, just be on the lookout for those. And there's lists people have compiled of predatory publishers, and those are easy to search out on the internet. So you can also just Google, you know, I Google everybody, like, hey, what are they saying about that person, entity thing, business, car shop, I don't know. I just try to see what people, and you have, you know, there's always going to be a few people that say stuff, but I always, you know, try to take it all in. What's the majority? Like a book review. If like a whole bunch of people like it and a whole bunch of people don't like it, there's going to be, you know, there's just people in the middle that are going to be like, I think it was okay. Yeah. But yes. And then there's also the manager. I joke with some of my, now we've signed authors that we've had for 5-6 years, been working with them for a long time on 5 books, maybe sometimes like one a year. And I would joke with a few of those people from the early years, like, I think I should get paid billable hours for like therapy, because I would be always constantly holding hands of authors is a big part of my job too.
Yeah.
It's a very, so signing the contract is very exciting time. Also, when your book comes out, is very energy, emotionally charged time. And, you know, stuff goes wrong in publishing sometimes, and, or people get really nervous about how the books, I got a bad review. What should we do? I'm like, this is just this is it. This is what we're doing. So we're not pulling the book down because I got a bad review. So it's an emotional time throughout the process.
Yeah. And creatives are often a little neurotic, aren't they? Aren't we?
Yes. I've had to tell a person to pull over their car because I was afraid she was in an accident. Talk to me about something that went wrong. I'm like, but then if it turned out it wasn't wrong. I'm like, see? You would have crashed your car, and it was nothing was even wrong. So you just have to take it down a notch or 7. It'll be okay.
Yes. Yeah. Wow.
But I am that very calm, sort of like, everything's going to be fine. Like, I don't ever sort of get beyond over this. So I have that, and they always say, you have such a calming way about you. I'm just going to, but I've been, you know, I think it was just working in restaurants early on and, you know, the world is sort of burning around you sometimes. You just have to keep focused and get through it because multiple people freaking out isn't going to fix it. It's going to make it worse. So let's just stand in the center of the storm, figure it out. And then I would say, is everyone still alive? Then we're going to be fine. This is just a book, right?
It's exactly. Book. It's just a book. It's not life and death. I worked with a publisher. I was a co-founder of a publisher. And I was the developer of the marketing program and I was with them for 5 years. And, you know, everything was life and death. Like it needs to be dealt with now. And it was a 24/7 job and it wore me down. And eventually I just left. I just sold my shares and left because I just didn't want to live with that high stress, high pressure. And it's just a book, you know, it can wait till tomorrow. Nothing is so dire that we need to be talking at 2 a.m, you know, over this.
Exactly. If there are no publishing emergencies,
right?
It's just calm down. Right. Calm there down. Are no emergencies in this industry. Right. My best friend's a hairdresser, and she says that she goes, there are no emergencies in hairdressing or publishing. It's like it's fine. Yeah. The worst thing that can happen is like you get to your book event and the books aren't there. Mm-hmm. We've had that happen a couple of times. We've fixed it. That like early on, shipments got lost 1 year. It was like their first, second year or something like that. So you just, you know, but that's a learning experience, and you learn from that and you move and you just get better. So I always have a focus on what is working. How can I make this better? How can we build the business? What kind of things can we shed? So those are my focuses every day. Like what this, you know, let's refine this process and make sure it works better. You kind of have to have systems in place when you have so many people.
Oh yeah.
Cause it can get a little crazy.
Do you use a system manager software type of thing?
Sitch and I, we're on Todoist. We just share a Todoist and she knows what I'm working on. I know what she's working on. We're all in Dropbox together, the whole team. And then we have like systems in there that we all check off things that we've done. So we know where everyone is on whatever project. Then there's the whole thing with royalties. That's my partner handles royalties and database management. That's our assistant does that. So keeping the contact, you know, they used to be all me. I did all that. So I moved to Hawaii. Great. I have to go in and change everything everywhere. So that's cool. I'm so glad you live in Hawaii. That's amazing. But now I have a person that does that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because and authors will say like, I want to move my book forward 4 weeks. I'm having, you know, an issue. I'm like, yeah, life, take it from me. I know exactly what that's like. It's not good to not feel good. I get it. But that just triggers like a whole list of things that we all have to do. You know, we have to change schedule. Yeah. It's not just like, move it forward 4 weeks. There's a whole string of things that will happen after that trigger work for 4 people, which is fine, you know, but we do it. But they used to, like I said, when the onus of that is all on one person, I was feeling like you were feeling. Yeah. So I'm glad we had, we brought these people on when I wasn't well. And when I started feeling better, I'm like, it turns out you don't have to be really sick to have help. It's great. I love having help. Help is good.
It's okay to say I need help. Yeah. So last question. I know you're a really busy person, as we all are. I don't want to keep you too much longer. But last question. Distribution is such a big thing in publishing. And, you know, indie authors, near impossible to get books into bookstores, maybe some indie bookstores and consignment and things like that. So how do you handle your authors and books in bookstores, and how important do you think that is at this point in the industry, since ebooks are such a big, you know, and growing segment of sales?
Yeah. And that's a good question. From day one, I wanted it to be very easy for authors to get their books into bookstores because I'm an author and I know what it's like to get all the way up to the end and have a bookstore even talk to you and then like, we can't order your books because so goodbye. Yeah. So I never wanted that to be a thing. So from the first, we signed up with Ingram many years ago now. I actually went to a cocktail party and I met the woman that created it. And she was amazing and we're still friends. And she gave me a person inside Ingram I've been working with since we got there, and he's lovely. And now he's our business analyst. He's like, you guys are doing great. I'm like, thanks. But I feel like he helped me put my first book up. So I'm like, he's seen this massive growth. So we've from the beginning always did the deepest discount available and returnable. So mm-hmm. every book, and that's a risk because we could, you know, we could sell 10,000 books and then 4,000 of them come back. Mm-hmm. So that's not real money yet. You have to wait, you have to wait out that cycle.
Yeah.
So that, you know, but I knew that going in because again, I think it's beneficial that I've been an author and I've been on the other side and I know sort of what the kind of the process.
Yeah. It gives you a different perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't, you know, not everyone is a salesperson like me. So we give them ARCs. So they get 5 physical ARCs and then they get eBooks, they get eARCs that they can give to anybody for blurbs, reviews, that kind of thing.
You're talking about the authors. That's what you give to the authors.
Yeah. 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 We give them that, but they can also walk into a bookstore with that and be like, here, you know, it's a reader copy. We give them sell sheets and everything else like that. But that's distribution is a big thing. And we always want that to be a thing. So we're in a VIP class with Ingram. So I have my own dedicated business analyst and a team of reps now that work on, cause we have a ton of titles. So, I'm getting clued in on some enhancements they're about to make to their systems. And that is really exciting. Mm-hmm. So we're currently very, very happy with Ingram. Mm-hmm. We also have been entertaining partnering up with a larger distributor mm-hmm. for certain books and different things. So mm-hmm. that's something we're working on for this year, but I can't talk about it too much because we're still talking. But mm-hmm. Always looking, going back to the always looking how to grow the business, how to make things better. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my focus all the time.
Library sales. How do library sales work?
We actually with Baker & Taylor, mm-hmm. but Ingram does a big part of our libraries too. And the libraries are buying a lot more ebooks nowadays, I've noticed. So we get a lot of ebook sales for their catalogs. All of our books mm-hmm. are in a lot of libraries around the country too. Ebook is an interesting question that you brought up because I thought that would be, it's pretty even for us. It's like we mm-hmm. sell almost as many ebooks as we do paperbacks. We sell a lot of physical books. It's interesting. So yeah, I don't know exactly why, because I don't like to collect a lot of physical books because I don't have a large home and right. I like having them on my Kindle. Although then I do miss having a book in my hand. So I go to my library a lot. Mm-hmm. So if I want a book to hold my hand, I go to the library. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but I'm a book fan. But yeah, anything we can do to make it easy for our authors to get out there and talk about their books and sell them, we're all on board for that.
And what's your, I lied, I have one more question. What is your royalty structure for authors? Because, you know, with the big publishers, authors make pennies.
Yeah. We have, so it's different for each category. So like ebooks are one thing and then paperbacks are a different split, but it's industry standard, I guess I could say that. So it's, you know, don't go into it thinking you're going to be a millionaire. I guess I can say that because we take a piece and then you get a piece. So mm-hmm. sometimes I think authors are like, oh, my book is $16. I will get $16 when they sell a book. I'm like, oh, that's not mm-hmm. how it really goes.
No.
Especially if you're with a press that has our business design because we're a POD press currently still. Mm-hmm. There are some titles we're doing small print runs for, and we're going to be hopefully moving into more of that. The thing I can't talk about mm-hmm. yet. But so there's that. But I also, it's important to know that there's printing costs, there's shipping costs, there's all these other costs that, and when I first started doing, like, wow. So we net, you know, a couple bucks mm-hmm. and then you get some of that. Yeah, so that's, it's going to be $1 or $2 a book. I mean, it's not a lot, but if you indie pub, then you get all of it yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just part of it. But that's something
you also have to be able to turn around and invest money in marketing and in, you know, figuring out how the industry works and sending out the ARCs and building a team to get reviews and all of those things yourself, which is a whole separate job. So, you know, there's pros and cons to it.
And designing a book cover yourself sometimes looks like you design a book cover yourself. So you might have to pay for a book cover, which will be another investment. So you're putting in a lot of front money if you're doing it yourself. And mm-hmm. you should have an editor. You should really honestly pay for an editor too, or two.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. You need a developmental line editor and a copy editor. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like making dinner at home or going out to eat. You're going to pay more to go out to eat, but you're going to get different things and maybe surprise.
Well, thank you so much for taking your time to talk with me today. It's been really fascinating and I really admire everything that you've done and what you have created, taking Level Best from just the anthologies to what it is today with, you said 172 authors, I think, or 175. Yeah, I mean,
somewhere in there. Yeah. It's probably a little bit more. As of when it's, this airs, will be a few more than that. But it seems like we're always adding.
That's incredible. And you know, if you look at your list on the website, it's pretty amazing. You've got some great authors there. You've got beautiful covers. You've got such quality books. So you've created something really special, and I really admire that. And thank you for taking the time to talk with me about it.
Oh, that is that. Thank you so much. You've really made my whole month by inviting me on here, and it's just nice to talk to someone knowledgeable about the industry. And you know, I feel like simpatico with you.
Yeah.
I feel like we have very similar, yet different, you know, things. But we have similar things, and it's just nice to get to know you better, because I've known of you for a long time, and now I feel like I know you a lot better.
I know. Yeah.
Thank you so much for the honor.
Same.
Yeah. Thanks for inviting me. It was wonderful.
Great. Well, best of luck to you. And we will have you back again. I would love to talk more and pick your brain and see what else you can share with our listeners here to just sort of help them on their journey. So I'll be back.
Anytime. I'll come back. Yeah. I'll be back anytime you want me. Okay. This was really, really fun.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for listening and spending your time with me today, everyone. I'm Melissa Bourbon, and this is the Writer's Spark podcast. Take a moment to visit our website at www.writerssparkacademy.com. Check out our courses, our resources, and all the content there. And I will see you next time. Until then, happy writing.